This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
It hit. You could hear the roar. My ears popped. And debris started coming through the doorway.
We got down over our dogs. And we were both praying. Praying.
It was awful. I've never been through anything like that in my life.
It's devastation like none of us have ever seen before.
Landlines aren't working. Cell phone service is spotty. And so that's why we don't know for sure how many people died and how many people are still missing.
We had to, at times, crawl over casualties to get to live victims.
We're working really hard to support the families of the loved ones who were lost, as well as our employees. It's really important to us that we take care of them.
There are tears, but there are also hugs and words of comfort for each other and for the future.
Jill and I pray, and I sincerely mean this, pray for those who've lost loved ones and for those who are uncertain of the fate of their loved ones. They lost their homes, they lost their businesses, and it's a tragedy.
But we're digging out. We are tough. We're going to grieve, and then we're going to rebuild.
Welcome to CBS Mornings. As you see, a very tough day in Kentucky. They're not alone. We're going to get straight to the news because there is suffering this morning across the heartland of America's countless families struggle to recover today, to recover from one of the most devastating tornado outbreaks in U.S. history. These images are extremely upsetting. Communities have been left unrecognizable. People used to live here. Families are digging through rubble where their homes used to be.
At least 25 people are confirmed dead, but there are fears that number could be higher, much higher, in fact. One of those twisters ripped through several states, and it was on the ground for an estimated 227 miles. That would be longer than any tornado ever recorded in U.S. history.
These satellite images give you a sense of the scale of the damage. This is downtown Mayfield, Kentucky, before the storms. This is what it looks like now, block after block leveled by the massive twister. This radar map from Friday night shows just how widespread the storm system was. It reached as far north as Illinois and covered at least eight states.
We have complete coverage throughout the region led by CBS Evening News anchor, that's Nora O'Donnell, who's on the scene in Mayfield, Kentucky. Nora, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gail. You know, even just the pictures that we're bringing you, it does not tell the full story here. This is just a small, tight-knit community in West Kentucky. 10,000 people, their homes totally destroyed, and yet there is a glimmer of hope this morning that the death toll may not be as high as once expected. But, you know, look at this scene behind me. This is part of the harsh reality for thousands of the city's residents. Their homes crushed. This entire block, every home crushed. Their possessions blown. Miles away, and for many, their loved ones are gone. Also, buildings across this city, they are splintered apart. The mayor called the debris matchsticks. Many people we spoke to have nothing left, no savings, and now they need to rebuild everything.
It was merciless, unrelenting, and indiscriminate in its power. The monstrous tornado that tore through Kentucky left death and destruction in its path. It first touched down in central Arkansas Friday night and stayed on the ground for a record 227 miles, mostly through western Kentucky, where at least 80 people are feared to have died.
We're still finding bodies. I mean, we've got cadaver dogs in towns that I shouldn't have to be in.
We met some of those rescue teams here in Mayfield, in this town where a candle factory, initially believed to have 110 people inside, was torn to shreds.
They're still trying to make contact with different individuals to determine exactly how bad it is. I am praying that maybe original estimates of those we've lost were wrong. If so, it's going to be pretty wonderful, but it's way too early.
It's hard to find a part of the city that was spared. A church in town taken down to the studs, cars stacked on top of each other with windows blown out, roofs ripped off homes and businesses.
My bedroom was right here, that was the wall right there.
For Robert and Karima Bright, this is all that's left of their home. A small closet. It was the only one in their home and where they rode out the storm with their 7-year-old grandson.
He was so scared. Oh my God.
What were you saying to him?
I said, we're going to be okay. We're going to make it. Just hold on, hold on, hold on.
And when it was over, their late son's Bible was the first thing they found in the wreckage.
What does it mean to you to have your son's Bible?
More than my life.
Really? Oh my gosh.
It does. My baby's buried down the street.
What did you think when you, amid all this, and you find the Bible?
God. So good. Because he saved us in that closet.
The Brights told us they have no savings and are in need of immediate assistance.
We're going to have over 1,000 homes that are just gone.
That's why President Biden approved an emergency disaster declaration for Kentucky on Saturday. And yesterday, FEMA's director and Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas visited that candle factory.
Just taken aback by the level of devastation and the trauma that so many people have suffered. We learned of a cell phone that had 27 missed messages on it, which speaks of a loved one trying to reach someone in the factory.
Did you find who that cell phone belonged to?
We did not.
Amidst all the devastation, we saw the resilience of the people here.
We're going to grieve together. We're going to dig out and clean up together. And we will rebuild and move forward together. We're going to get through this together because that is what we do.
And, you know, we have heard so many harrowing stories of people able to survive this storm, including the man who owns this house right behind us. He told us the power went out, so he couldn't watch the path of the storm. He heard the storm coming. They said it was like a freight train. His ears started popping, and he ran into the middle of his hallway. That's when the debris started flying into him. He covered his head, praying that he would survive. He said 30 seconds later, it was over. And now you can see this is what is left of his home. Well, just over 2 miles from here, more than 100 workers at the Mayfield Consumer Products Factory were making candles when a tornado tore through the building. At least 8 of them were killed. Workers say they were told to huddle in a hallway, which was the strongest part of the building as the storm approached. Many say they saw the roof peel away and the walls cave in. The company says 8 other workers are still missing. Our lead national correspondent, David Begno, is following that story and is here with me. And David, just to think that many of these workers were there doing overtime, working around the clock to get these candles ready for the holidays.
You know, I interviewed the CEO of the company and he said, we have 8 people dead. And I said, wait a minute, the governor said 80 to 100. How do you only have 8? There's a big discrepancy here. And he said, well, we thought that many were dead because we couldn't reach them, couldn't make a call. And he said, we ended up over the next 24, 36 hours tracking them down. And that's why the apparent death toll is so much smaller than what we were led to believe it could be. You know, just about as soon as we got here, within the first 2 to 3 hours, we started talking to survivors who were tearfully telling us what it was like to survive the tornado and to then get out. You're going to hear from 4 of them now.
They told us it was a tornado warning coming and everybody needed to go for shelters. And all of a sudden, everything started caving in on everybody. Nobody seen it coming.
This is Barbara Tate. She worked at the Mayfield Consumer Products Factory for 2 years, right alongside her brother, who was there when the tornado hit and also got out alive.
Yes, it was a lot of stuff that fell on us, but we had to crawl like, you know, get on your knees and everything, crawl and try, because we couldn't move a certain way or everything would fall on top of us.
This is another survivor, Richard Padilla. He joined other workers in a central hallway, the strongest part of the building, when the alarms sounded.
Do you need some help?
he is still in so much pain after what he experienced.
The ceiling blows up. And a couple of seconds after that, a wall fall above us. And then we were in a position, very uncomfortable, with a lot of things over us. And then I finally saw somebody who was giving his hand to me.
Meet Felisa Lynn. She had only been working at the factory since September and was also in that central hallway when the roof was ripped off and the walls collapsed.
My both leg was twisted, my arm is twisted. To release my feet, I have to let go my two shoes. There was a small light in there, so I climb up myself.
She limped out of the wreckage and recorded this video. You hear her repeatedly saying, "Thank you, God, for saving me."
But thank you, Lord.
She also credits this man, Nelson Gonzalez, her supervisor, for rescuing her. He was the one who helped to free her legs so that she could get out.
I was make sure that the people was next to me. I wasn't going to leave them behind. I'm not going to let them down. They're my families as well.
Nelson and Richard had recently moved here from Puerto Rico. They were looking for work, and the candle factory needed seasonal workers. They were working the night shift along with Barbara and Felisa, four of the 110 people inside that factory when it got hit.
I close my eyes and all I see is people hollering and screaming for help. So I'm not doing good at all. You're messing with a person when you see that and you can't help anybody. You're trying to help yourself get out.
You understand why Ms. Barbara feels a sense of guilt for not being able to help more people. Listen, Nelson is headed back to Puerto Rico today with his son who worked the day shift and is okay. He wasn't there. Nelson said he's not sure if he's coming back, nor his wife told him, "You can tell everybody goodbye because I'm not letting you go back." The owner of the factory has started an account, a GoFundMe, to raise money, and the owner of the factory has given $100,000 to get it kickstarted to help the
employees.
This is awful,
what so many people have gone through here. David Fagno, thank you.
You bet.
And we'll be back from Mayfield in just a bit to talk about resilience and recovery. The city's mayor and the city's fire chief will join us live. And we'll also have a remarkable story of survival from a pastor whose church was largely destroyed. A last-moment decision actually saved his life, and he'll be with us in the 8 a.m. hour. But for now, let's go back to New York. Gail.
Nora, that was a tough 12 minutes to watch. Listen, nobody likes to see people suffer. And you can feel the pain. It's really palpable. And I never lose sight when you're looking at telling these stories, looking at the destruction, those things mean something to somebody. You know, it looks like a big rubble now, but that was somebody's life that we're looking at. It's tough.
Yeah, and most people don't have savings, you know? They don't have a lot here, and it's very difficult to rebuild. FEMA is on the ground, but people are sort of like, where do I stay? Where do I get my drugs? You know, pharmacy. I mean, sort of the most basic things that we all take for granted are needed.
Well, I'm listening to Governor Beshear. We will rebuild together. We will grieve together. But thank you so much. We'll be back to you a little bit later on. More than 200 miles northwest of Mayfield, recovery efforts will resume at another workplace, this too ripped apart by the storm. It's an Amazon facility in Edwardsville, Illinois. It's near St. Louis. That tornado killed at least six people. A seventh person was airlifted to a hospital. At least 45 people did survive the collapse of this warehouse. Mola Lange's on the scene there and has more on that story. Mola, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Gail. The fire department's still working to clear debris from the site, which is just on the back end of the building that you see behind me there. And they're still working with Amazon to make sure that all of the employees who worked here are accounted for. And we spoke with one mother who waited outside this facility for hours on Friday night, waiting for word on her son, only to find out he didn't make it.
He just had a really big heart. He would do anything for anybody.
Carla Cope's son, Clay, had been working as a contractor at the Edwardsville Amazon facility for nearly a year. Clay, a Navy veteran, would have turned 30 in 2 weeks. Carla says she and Clay spoke on the phone. She believes he used his final moments to warn others to take shelter.
I think he would help anybody. I wouldn't expect anything less of him to go back and try to help people to get to where they needed to be, partially because of his military training and partially just because that's who he was.
A swath of tornadoes cut through at least six states, one of them, tore into the Amazon warehouse in Illinois. The roof caved in on both sides of the facility, where workers prepare orders during the busy holiday season.
Our hearts are broken. For many of these folks, they were their friends, their coworkers, important people in their lives. And so we're going to do everything we can, you know, to support our employees, make sure they have access to all the services that they need.
Kelly Nantel is an Amazon spokesperson.
When you have a tornado that cuts right through the center of the building, it's a pretty devastating, force of nature. And that's what we had here.
It's a devastation Carla Cope and her family know all too well. Now taking care of Clay's beloved dog, Draco, as they mourn.
I guess you do what everybody else does. You take it day by day and try to figure out how you live without them.
Now, this Amazon facility will remain closed for at least the next few days. Amazon says they're waiting on first responders to finish their work here at the site, and then the company will determine the future of the building. Tony.
Mola, thank you very much. After a tragedy like this, there are multiple levels of why, and one of them is purely scientific. And for more on that, why a storm this strong, this late in the season, I want to bring in meteorologist Evelyn Taft of our Los Angeles stations KCBS-TV and KCAL. She's here to put this record-setting event into context. Good morning to you. So why were these storms so incredibly powerful?
Good morning, Tony. Yes, so powerful. And as we get a look at the radar from Friday, you're going to see the cluster of storms right there. And why right there? We had very cold polar air, 30 degrees in Minneapolis, and then 80-degree temperatures in Memphis. Record-breaking heat, which could be a part of climate change, of course, because it's December. It should be in the mid-50s in Memphis. So it's unbelievable. We got up to 80 degrees. So just the difference, take a look at that, and the clash in air masses. We had southerly winds at the surface, southwesterly winds aloft, mixing together with all of that warmth, that moisture, and that polar air. It was really just a perfect setup for such a big storm.
The other exceptional aspect to this storm was the duration of one of those tornadoes in particular. Yes. It's not confirmed yet, but it's estimated that it was on the ground for more than 200 miles.
Yes.
What explains that?
I mean, it's wild. 240 miles, maybe, we're thinking now, between 230, even up to 250. We're still assessing the damage on the ground, but just the sheer fuel that we had behind this storm could power 250 miles, which is unbelievable. The record was just a little under that, about 220. So if this is official, this could be an all-time record.
So tornadoes are rated up to level 5 in terms of wind speed. And as I understand it, they make that determination based on what they see on the ground in terms of damage. What are they looking for?
So like you said, Tony, you can't make that determination before. It has to be after. So we were just looking at video of that damage, and they're looking for literally foundations just off the ground. That's an EF5.
Yeah.
Completely leveled, you know, or just parts of a home. That could be like an EF3, but an EF4, EF5, this is what we're looking at.
So when you see this, I mean, you look at a foundation of a home right there, that would be suggestive of an EF5.
That could be an EF4 and EF5. Nothing left, no foundation. EF5. Just the foundation could be an EF4, EF5, but this certainly looks like it could be either EF4 or EF5 status.
Evelyn, I appreciate putting it all in context. I was reading that if this is determined to be an EF5, it would be only the third in recorded history in the month of December. So
exactly.
We're talking possibly the strongest December storm on record.
On record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Gail, as we send it back to you to give you an idea of the intensity of this storm and how far it carried things, there was one picture that popped up on social media, a family photo from Dawson Springs that showed up more than 100 miles away in the state of Indiana.
I saw that picture. I thought it was very touching that it still survived intact. Thank you very much, Tony. And Evelyn, glad you're here today.
I'm CBS News correspondent Major Garrett, host of the podcast Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen. During the Cold War, FBI agent Robert Hansen traded classified secrets to the Kremlin in exchange for cash and jewels. In the podcast, you'll hear from Hansen's closest friends, family members, victims, and colleagues for the most comprehensive telling of who Robert Hansen really was. Binge the entire series now. Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen is available on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.